now and then, here and there, and always at sexpotcomedy.com.
Welcome to the Narrators Podcast. I'm Robert Rutherford.
And I'm Andrew Orvidal. This podcast collects stories that were told at the Narrators, a monthly storytelling event that features people telling true stories based on a theme.
The show takes place on the third Wednesday of every month at the Buntport Theater in Denver, Colorado.
This episode was recorded live on October 15, 2014. The theme of the evening was number two.
Our next storyteller... She is a writer for Reverb. She is the mastermind behind Rue Black. Please give a warm welcome to Rue Johnson.
Hi, good evening. It was a Monday morning, and I was painfully hungover. I had been in an after-hour spot drinking Red Stripe and smoking cigars and acting real womanish with a fireman from Los Angeles. He was amazing, my first fireman. I was really inspired by him. He's awesome. He was tall and black and very fine. Anyhow, so we had been out drinking all night, and it was just a really, really long morning. And I woke up kind of in a panic, like, I have to go, I have to get it together. So I'm hungover, you know, sunglasses on, wearing a pencil skirt, you know, looking very American, and, you know, preparing to leave for my day. So I'm rushing out the door, and I live in Capitol Hill, and there was a man on Colfax, and he asked me for change. And it was just one of those times where I just wasn't the right time. I was hungover, probably still drunk, still had my sunglasses on, a huge bag. I'm rushing, trying to get into a cab to head down to my office so that I didn't miss a meeting. So I disregarded him. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and I thought about it all the way, the entire cab ride, until I realized I didn't have any coffee. So, because I'm American, I went over to the 7-Eleven, and I got myself a coffee. Coming out of the 7-Eleven, there was a woman standing there, and she had this huge bag, this huge luggage bag, like nothing that you would ever want to really carry on the street with you. And behind that bag was a vacuum cleaner. So immediately I think, what is this lady doing with this vacuum cleaner outside of 7-Eleven? And she reached out to me, and she had a $20 bill in her hand, and she said, I really want to go inside and get cigarettes, but I don't want to leave my vacuum cleaner. So I was just like, lady, not today, not today, not today. I'm late. The fireman, I'm still drunk. Not today. Ugh. So because I had disregarded the first guy, I said to myself, obviously, you know, the universe is giving me a second try. So my second encounter with someone who, you know, was considered, you know, homeless or just, you know, less fortunate and most certainly not coming off the high of having, you know, fucked a fireman all night long and running late. Yeah, I mean, just, you know, I was clearly having the better day is what I'm trying to tell you. So I look at her and I was like, you don't want to leave the vacuums. Okay, give me the money, lady. Give me the money. So I rush inside and I tell the guy, I'm like, I need a pack of Camel Crush. And I don't really smoke necessarily. So I was just like, a pack of Camel, whatever, give it to me. So he gives it to me and I rush outside and I thrust the cigarettes at her. I have my coffee and her change. And she said, I'm surprised you didn't take $2. And I was like, why would I take $2? And she was like, well, you know, just in case you need it for later. And I was so surprised that I was being offered money by a homeless person after having ignored the other man from having fucked the fireman. I mean, you see where I'm going with it. So I was so surprised. She offered me the money, and I told her, no, you know, no, 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 don't worry, it's not a big deal. And something about her energy, I asked her her name, and she said that her name is Michelle. And she had this bright blue, almost as blue as this dress, nail polish that really just brought out her eyes or something. I don't know. It just really took me to a place of wanting to talk more with her. So we moved over into the parking lot, and she had the vacuum. And I was like, so what is up with the vacuum? Why don't you want, what is going on with the vacuum? And she said, it's the only thing that I have that reminds me of when I had a home. And so, you know, something started happening in my chest, like my cold black heart, something was beating. I started feeling something happening in here. I don't know. It was just making me feel really warm inside. And it felt so poetic to me. And so we talked about that. And I found that it was so moving to me that the only thing she had that reminded her of home was the one thing that we use to clean up our lives, right? So we're having this conversation about the vacuum. And she said, you know, I think that's really interesting that you came up with that. You know, I agree. You know, I'm a writer. I write fiction. And I was like, I'm a writer too. That's so cool. And she said, well, you know, you're probably doing better in your life than I am. And at the time that she said that, I was about to explain to her how I was hungover, the fireman, blah, blah, blah. I was going to take it right back to the story. This man came up and he was wearing a pea coat and like executioner's gloves and he had these really bright green eyes. And he said to her, hey, do you want to go get that room like we talked about? And I looked at her and she looked at me and she was like, don't judge me, girl. Sometimes you have to do what you have to do. And I realized how similar we were because the fireman, the stranger, having been out the whole night before, et cetera, she was going to leave with this guy with executioner's gloves and wearing a pea coat in 90-degree weather. And so we continued our conversation. She kind of told him to wait for a little bit. And we talked about she had been through a divorce. She was kind of a traveler. She had been ambling all through Colorado. And I just found that we were so similar. She asked me how old I was. I told her I'm 30. I asked her how old she was. She told me she was 30. We were literally the exact same person. And so maybe, you know, she had been up all night long from whatever she had been doing. Her hair was kind of stringy. But she had all this life within her. And so I asked her if she was going to leave and go off with this man to this hotel. And she said that she was. And so I told her, I said, you know, if he gets weird, just hit him with the vacuum, you know? And she laughed, and we laughed, and we fell against each other, laughing so hard. Just two people, two sides of the same coin, from two entirely different worlds, but really from the exact same world. And we laughed in the sunlight, me with my coffee, her with her electric blue nails, and all of her problems and her worries and her burdens being carried behind her, and the one thing that mattered to her the most, her vacuum cleaner. And so once it was time for us to depart, I was rushing looking for a pen, and I said, I don't have a pen. I want to give you my number if you have an emergency. And she looked at me and she said, you're a writer without a pen. And I was like, and you're a lady with a vacuum cleaner without a home. What? That's so weird. It just blew my mind. I mean, this really blew my mind. So she found a pen, and I wrote my number on her hand. Her name was Michelle. And she said, okay, you go ahead, and I'm going to leave with him, and I'm going to walk and make sure that you're okay. And I was like, no, I'm trying to make sure that you're okay. You're leaving with the stranger. I'm doing fine. And she said, no, I'm going to be fine. And she grabbed her huge bag, and she handed the vacuum cleaner over to him, which also struck me because that was her most prized possession. And she handed it over to a stranger. And they walked down the street, going off to God knows where. And I watched them walk away. And I thought to myself, she's so beautiful. And as I thought that, she turned around to me and she said, you're so beautiful and you really made my day. And I was like, no, you're beautiful. You made my day. No way. And I watched her walk away and it really stuck with me that sometimes when we're given another opportunity by the universe, sometimes a second chance, we should absolutely take it because we will realize that more times than not, we are exactly the same person as those around us. Thank you.
That's Rue Johnson. This gentleman, you may have recently seen him on Comedy Central's a television show called Adam Devine's House Party. He is one third of the Grolix troupe with Andrew Orvidal. Everybody, please welcome Ben Roy.
I'm real nervous, and I don't like being in the light like that. That weirds me out. it's fucking super scary. When I was 19, I was fat and angry. And real angry. At the time I lived in Maine. I'm from Maine, which is just a shithole of epic proportions. And not a good place. A lot of people think Maine's awesome. It sucks. It is fucking awful. If you're on the coast and you get to drink cups of butter and sleep in lighthouses or whatever the fuck they do on the coast. That's awesome. But I'm from inland Maine, which Conan O'Brien referred to as the deep south of the far north, which is pretty fucking right on. And I was miserable. And at 19, my ex-girlfriend, my girlfriend at the time, my live-in girlfriend, had just decided to wreck my Chevrolet Cavalier, brand new one. Which was, if you remember, in the late 90s, was pretty fucking sweet car. Had a cassette player in it, which I wasn't used to such luxury accoutrement, so I was pretty excited about this car. But she wrecked it driving back from sleeping with her ex-boyfriend. So after that event, the three of us decided it was best that she just moved out. So at that point, just a flurry of skateboarders and graffiti artists moved into my one-bedroom apartment. At one time, there was about eight of us living there. And we destroyed my television. We just destroyed everything. And it just got miserable. And I was real unhappy. And there's a saying, I think it's in a song, that says that a darkness in the heart cannot be cured by moving the body from one place to another. And I hadn't heard that at the time. So so I decided it was time to fucking leave. Before I moved to Colorado and settled here, I made three trips. And the number three to me, if you ever have any kind of habit or problem, number two is, it's troubling. Because we all believe in some way, whether superstitiously, that triads are big in our culture. You know, I mean, anytime two celebrities die, you're like, when's the third one gonna happen? There's always that feeling with it. And number two is an unsettling event because it rests somewhere between an anomaly, number one, and a pattern. So number two is just this what am I experiencing? So the first time I went out was the first time that I was going anywhere and drinking a lot, and I was also had been having panic attacks, so I'd been prescribed Klonopins, which at the time they used to give you for anxiety, which is like trying to fucking cure a headache with morphine, because it is such an overkill of a drug if you've ever taken Klonopins. I mean, it just makes you, I've said it before, but I used to drink and mix Klonopins, which is the chemical equivalent of unreading books. It makes you so fucking stupid. I mean, you become real fucking dumb on it. So the first time I went out to visit my guitarist for my band, I had a little bit of a reaction, which I won't tell you about, which is its own story on its own. But it's maybe that was an isolated thing. Maybe that happened once. So the second time I decided to go out, I was going out with a girl that I had really fallen for. And at the time, I was listening to a lot of Os Rotten and The Pissed and Gigi Allen, which means that then if I enjoy that music, I'm genetically predisposed to Greyhound bus travel, right? I'm just built for it. I am capable of enduring it if you listen to garbage like that. So at that time, we decided we were going to take a bus ride out, because that sounds like a fun way to see the fucking country, right? Drive out on a ride out together on a bus, which is something you could never do with a loved one, but somebody you're in love with, that's new. If I tried to travel on a Greyhound bus with my wife, it would be a mess because she would just be dealing with my neuroses constantly. But when you're in a new thing, you're trying to hide it, and there's an excitement about it. And we met a lot of really, but it was the first time I'd ever traveled. Has anybody ever traveled across country on a bus at all? It's fucking ridiculous. First of all, if you live in a small town, every single small town has a Greyhound bus station that is serviced by one Greyhound bus. There's only one bus in the whole Greyhound fleet, and when you're on it, it stops at every fucking town all the way across the country. So the minute you start to nod off against the window, you're woken by this. Lights on. Holy fuck. Well, the first time, it's awesome. First time, you're like, where are we? Look at this little town. Huh. Fall asleep, 45 minutes later, lights. Holy fuck, I just fell asleep. Oh my God, by the 50th time, it's obnoxious. Greyhound, it's basically, it's for $99, you can have a fever dream all the way across the country. It's basically what you're doing. So when I got to Boulder, I'd only been there once for 2 days. I'd never been there. The second time that I showed up, I get there, and I promptly decide to just start partying with my buddy. And this girl is with us, and we start drinking. And the first day is fine, but the second day, I'm now decided that I'm going to up the amount of Klonopins that I'm taking and start drinking more, because I only came out with $60 on this trip in cash. So if you take 3 Klonopins, you immediately can reduce the number of beers you can have. I've found it's a 1-to-2 ratio. So if it takes you 12 beers, if you take 1 Klonopin, it's only going to take you 10, deduced by 2 for every pill you take. It's a math, it's an algorithm I had come up with at that time. And I'm warning you, there's no science behind that at all, but it worked, right? And so if I took 3 of these fucking things, I only need a 6-pack, and I was sideways. So I start drinking in the backyard of my buddy, and I'm laughing to myself about something I said sitting in a hammock. Because I'm in Boulder on vacation. To which he responded, "What's so funny, man?" To which I responded by throwing a chair at him. So I launched a chair at him, and not like one of those movie type shots where he ducked and it hit the wall of his house behind him. And now he lives with a girl who is not privy to my behavior at all. Her parents are from New Mexico, and they're like scientists and shit like that. They work on the nuclear program. And she's like very well, like she's very, like her family has a lot of money. And so she was very proper. And she witnesses this, and she's like, "You got to get him the fuck out of here." So they decide to not have me stop drinking, but to relocate my drinking somewhere else, which is the better idea. So they put me in the bed of a pickup truck, and we drive to a party, at which point I'm unloaded into a party full of people that I do know. There are a lot of them are from Maine that had moved out there. And I proceed to drink well over my algorithmic 6 beers that I'm allotted based on the math I had done. I hit on a girl by saying, "Dan told me a lot about you, but he never told me you were so dope." I was told that I said that. But anyway, so after this point, I black out. I actually remember all the way up to that. Apparently, I started picking fights with people that I know and people I don't know, and I ended up on the lawn after being hurled out of the party by a kid I grew up with, onto the lawn at Baseline and Broadway, which you know where that is in Boulder, which is way south Boulder. I woke up to a police cruiser pointing that fucking light at me on the lawn, and all of them at the party standing there yelling at me, "Get him the fuck out of here! Get him out of here!" And I this is before cell phones, I have nothing, right? So the cop picks me up, peels me off the ground, and puts me in the car, and we drive off. And I wake up sometime later, I don't know, still dark out. I wake up in a room, and I immediately woke up and went, "I'm in detox." And it's almost like if you're having a stroke. I know people who have had strokes, and their body just knows they're having a stroke. It's the same with detox. Your body, somehow you've never been there, is just like, "You're a detox. Congratulations." And I just knew right away. I was like, "Whoa, detox, bros. What am I doing?" And I'm still way fucked up. Okay, so they decide, I've got no money on me, so they figure I'm useless. I've got no cell phone because it's before that. I'm just wearing shorts and a shirt and shoes. And they said that I can go outside out front and smoke a cigarette. That as long as I go outside, but I have to leave my shoes behind so that I can't leave. And so I go out front and start smoking a cigarette. And the guy goes inside and I take off running. I run like a motherfucker. Now, I don't know where I'm at. I have no fucking clue. He drove for a little bit or something. I don't know. He could have flown. I had no fucking clue where I was. I started running barefoot through the streets of Boulder, and I realized now in hindsight, just to give you a point of reference, which I had no idea, I'm way out, Boulder's Detox is way out by the North Broadway Cafe and the bus stop, like the strip club. So way North Broadway. So now I've taken off running, and I'm barefoot sometime in the middle of the night, and I have no fucking clue where I am, no phone, no money, and I just start. Now I decide I can stop running because I figure, what the fuck are they going to go after me for? So I just keep walking, and then I eventually find myself to Canyon, where my buddy's house was, and I go to that same house where I'd thrown the chair at him, and in the middle of the night, I start knocking on the door. They don't answer. They choose a much more direct route of just calling the police on me while I'm at the back door. And then the cops come around the corner and they're, and you'd think Boulder police, you know, I'm fucking bro, right? Fucking bro. No, assholes. Huge assholes. Come around the corner and they're like, what the fuck are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm staying here. My stuff is inside. They know me. These guys know me. You guys know me. You fucking know me. Right? And they're yelling out the windows, get out of here. She's yelling. And my buddy feels bad, but he can't let me in. They hand me my bag. And I'm like, where the fuck am I supposed to go? And they're like, I don't care. So they just give me my bag. And I just am left alone in Boulder. My bus doesn't leave for 3 more days. So I don't have a way home. So I start walking again. And I make myself up way up to the hill. And I found another kid's apartment that I knew because there were a few Maine people, and I fucking found it somehow. And I walk up and I start knocking on it, but the people in that house had been at the party. So now they're like, don't fucking let them in. And I'm like, you fucking know me. You fucking know me. I'm standing outside, which is not getting the door unlocked. So finally, this guy that I went to high school with, this guy named Matt Harris, who's like one of the sweetest, most sensitive people I've ever met, was like, I can hear him arguing, and he's like, we can't leave him out on the fucking streets. He doesn't know where he is. He's not wearing shoes for some reason. So they send me in, they lay open the door, they let me inside. I sit down on the couch. He's like, just sleep down here, man, and chill out. And so I sleep, so I sit down, and I immediately pick up their phone, and I call home to talk to my mother, because that'll make me feel better about myself. And my conversation with her was about how big of a fuck-up I am and how big of a screw-up and that this was a mistake and she knew it. And I hung up the phone and I grabbed a bottle of Klonopins and I dumped the whole fucking bottle in my mouth. Because what better way to repay a kind deed than by dying on that person's couch? Which makes you all a lot real uncomfortable, but that was like... So I dumped the whole thing in my mouth, and I'm sitting on the couch. And I wish I could tell you that, like, the first thing that goes through your mind when you're about to kill yourself is that, like, all the people you love and the reasons to not do it. But in that instance, what went through my mouth is, what the fuck are these things made of? Like, they tasted so bad. Like, I can't, have you ever tried to chew a pill down? It was so gross, and I spit it back in the bottle. The only thing that saved my life that night was a finicky palate. That's basically, like, the fact that I couldn't do it. I wish I could say there was something else. I spit this wet ball of Klonopins back in that I had to jam in with my thumb, not realizing that even if I didn't chew it, I just soaked up, like, the outer edge of about 12 tablets off of it. And I'm immediately like, well, I guess I'm going to sleep. And I just passed out. I slept for like 14 hours. Woke up. That next day, the girl I went out there with flew herself back home. She was so unimpressed with my behavior and everything I had done. She flew herself back home. And I was left 2 days later of everybody being silent and acting, just staying on that couch to take the Greyhound back all by myself. And I got on the bus, and at Omaha, this Russian girl got on who didn't speak any fucking English and sat beside me, and she cuddled with me all the way back across the country. Must have known. We didn't speak the same. She didn't speak very good English. It was very broken. But she, like, laid her head on me, and like, I just stared out the window, and we rode all the way back, And it was very romantic. And then when we got to the terminal in New York, she got off and we just stood there and she's like, now what, where do you go now? And I go, I got to go this way. And she was like, okay. And we just parted ways. I've never seen that person again. And I wish I could tell you that there was some positive outcome. But I drank like that for another 13 or 14 years after that. There's really no moral to any of this story at all. It was just the second trip I took. Thank you guys for listening. I appreciate it.
Ben Roy, everybody. All right.
The Narrators Podcast is recorded and produced by Ron Doyle.
The Narrators Podcast is brought to you by these amazing sponsors.
The great guys at Illegal Pete's and Greater Than Records, who in addition to providing rad burritos all over town, provide great local music and comedy.
Check out the appropriately named Sexy Pizza at either of their locations in Capitol Hill or Old South Pearl, or on their website, sexypizzaonline.com.
And finally, by the internet superheroes at Commerce Kitchen, who provide internet marketing solutions and search engine optimization for all your e-commerce needs. Check them out at commercekitchen.com.
For more information about the Narrators and to listen to past episodes, go to thenarratorspodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Hey. Wah, wah, wah.